I ain't working anymore, roughly.
Just not working anymore. They used to call us working class. folks, and welcome to the June 30th, 2012 edition of the Illinois World Labor Hour, brought to you on the airwaves on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, and also streamed worldwide at WEFT.org. And as always, the views and opinions expressed during this hour of programming are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of WEFT's management, board of directors, or of Prairie Air Incorporated. Now here's Tom to acknowledge some of our underwriters.
This hour of programming is brought to you in part by Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month. For more information or for the unemployed and underemployed helpline, call area code 217-328-2295. That's 328-2295. And this hour of programming is being brought to you by you listeners of WEFT and by the Brotherhood of the Maintenance of the Way. The Brotherhood of the Maintenance of the Way employees are proud to continue their support for the Illinois World Labor Hour. A democratic union, the BMWE, celebrates the voice for labor on WEFT. It is our hope that all workers may share the same benefits that we enjoy, such as living wages, job security, away-from-home expense pay, early retirement, Canadian-style health insurance, and guaranteed year-round work. And the Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by you listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois.
Thanks, Tom. I'm your host, Bob Pelesny. Here today with co-host Tom Thomas, who will have some workers' interest news for us, and later in the show, the Labor Hour Cultural Corner. Tom's poem for this week from his Cries for Justice collection will be Choose a Road. Also with us here today is Bill Gorell, co-founder of the original Illinois Labor Hour. And now here's Tom to kick off this week's edition of Workers' Interest News.
Last Wednesday, the Urbana School Board unanimously approved a three-year contract with the Urbana Education Association, which represents about 500 teachers and support staff members. The contract includes a 3.1% wage increase for teachers for the next 3 years, which includes step increases. A step increase is when teachers get credit for another year worked and that jump in their pay. For support staff members covered by the contract, it includes a 4% raise in the first year, including step increases, and a 3.1% increase in the second and third years of the contract. In past contracts, the school board has made retirement contributions in lieu of salary increases for teachers. At Wednesday's meeting, school board president John Demmett praised the teachers' union for its realistic approach, saying it obviously recognized what was best for the school district and the students. Beth Hand, the most recent Urbana Education Association president, reported that 93% of the union ratified the contract. The school board will contribute 82% of individual health premiums in the first and second years of the contract and 83% in the third year. The school board also included salary increases and benefits for non-union support staff members and administrators that matched the contract, meaning a 3.1% salary increase for them. The new contract is going to cost the school district some $2 million, but according to Demmett, there will be no additional cost to the school district or the teachers. Bob?
Thanks, Tom. I got a story here from In These Times, again by the intrepid labor reporter Mike Elk, and he reports a recent Supreme Court ruling in Knox versus SEIU Local 1000 has some labor advocates howling that the Supreme Court is beginning to come after workers. Now, I would editorialize here and say that they're just beginning to come after workers. I think they've been doing that for many years. Anyway.
Oh, you bring something up. One of the few sort of movement or ideological conservative friends I have on Facebook, a local guy, he who has many kind of lefty friends, he came in with, we ought to have White People's Month.
Oh.
And he forgot even the history part of it. And see, that's what I mean right there. And because of the reason I laughed is like there's a great 200-year history
right.
of courts abusing labor in the United States and siding with the bosses in many contexts from the idea that unions were illegal combines
right.
and should be subject to antitrust type laws and or that they're conspiracies up to the the earlier in the 20th century, especially like coal mining areas, many places where there were strikes, the judiciary would often take the company's side when it was obvious that they shouldn't be. And that's what my argument is with this guy. We already know what the white bread establishment white people want you to know about American history. We not even just need Black History Month, Women's History Month,
right.
and others. We need a Labor History Month.
Yes.
And we need the laws. There's a law in Illinois about teaching labor history that I don't think is really followed that well. And it astounds me. Here's something that does astound me, as long as we were just talking about a teacher story,
mm-hmm.
is all of these teachers are in these unions. And they've done very well. Perhaps they've forgotten what it was like before the unions when teaching was just supposed to be the job that you did because you were a young woman and you did it until you snagged that man.
Yeah.
Now it's a real profession. And the union did that. And I think I don't understand why people come out of American schools so ignorant about unions.
That's amazing. It is amazing. All right, back to this story. It says the 7-2 ruling last week states that public sector employees must opt in to have their money spent on political action instead of opting out, as has previously been mandated in the case Beck versus CWA. The ruling could dramatically decrease the amount of money that public sector unions, whose members currently compose 37% of all union members, have to spend on political action. Many public sector union members are already financially strapped and may choose not to give their money to political campaigns. The drop in the number of public employees giving money could increase dramatically if employers put pressure on public employees to not opt in to giving money to their union's political action funds. The recent Supreme Court ruling, Citizens United, eliminated protections that previously barred employers from pressuring workers on political matters. Now, combined with the Citizens United ruling, employers in the public sector could possibly pressure their employees to decline to give money to their union's political action funds. Unfortunately, this decision continues the attack on the right of public sector workers to act collectively to impact their workplace on important issues, says SEIU Local 1000 president spokesperson Jim Heron-Zamora, whose union was sued for imposing an assessment fee for political action on workers without first getting their consent. It says here, a few days after the decision, the court also struck down a 1912 Montana law that limited the amount of money corporations could spend on local and state elections in Montana. It says here, corporations have a fiduciary duty to their shareholders. However, unlike unions, corporations don't have to ask their shareholders to make any political expenditure. Supreme Court doesn't say a word about that when it comes to shareholders, but they say something about unions. It's unions that are more democratic than any other institution, and they want to sit down and micromanage how they spend their money. It says here, the last paragraph, unions are some of the most heavily regulated institutions in America. Under the Labor Management Reporting and Disclosure Act of 1959, every union is required to file quarterly LM forms with the Department of Labor that lay out all their expenses in detail, including salaries of officials, political action expenditures, and reimbursement of expenses. These databases are searchable online at the Department of Labor's website. Corporations, by contrast, are not required to file forms outlining all of their expenditures.
I'll comment on this, too. Although there is a really big problem in the unions with members not participating in the process, and there is a real lack quite often of actual democracy in the unions because of the way things are structured by the leadership, the lack of responsibility by shareholders is awful. What they allow their corporations that they own to do, and they give their votes to other people without even thinking about it through proxies.
Proxies, yeah. It's quite incredible how that works, Bill. And finally, some people have actually gone to some shareholders' meetings and stood up and questioned some of the officials, and they're getting escorted out by the police these days because the corporate execs don't want to hear anybody disagreeing with what they're saying at these shareholder meetings.
That is true. And besides that, just, you know, a lot of the big shareholders are big pension funds controlled by unions.
Right.
And I think sometimes they do use that leverage, but I don't think they use it often enough.
No, they don't.
Hey, for workers working outside and temperatures regularly topping off in the high 90s, keeping hydrated is the key to keeping yourself healthy. Dehydration can be dangerous if you let it go too far. The Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics lists the following as early signs of dehydration: thirst, headache, flushed skin, premature fatigue, increased body temperature, faster breathing and pulse rate, increased perception of efforts, and decreased exercise capacity. More advanced symptoms include dizziness and fainting, unusual weakness, and labored breathing. It is important to drink fluids before, during, and after any exercise, including swimming, even if you don't feel particularly thirsty. A general guideline is to have 16 ounces an hour before exercise or work, and 4 to 8 ounces every 15 minutes during physical activity, and then another 16 ounces an hour after activities. Aside from keeping hydrated during activities, you should be drinking throughout the day to meet your body's requirements. In the past, 8 glasses of water per day was a standard recommendation, but we now know that that number is only arbitrary, depending on the actual heat and the intensity of the work you are doing.
Thanks, Tom. Speaking of trying to change some of these unions a little bit, a story I came across here today, 98-year-old labor journalist Harry Kelber has launched his bid to run against Richard Trumka for presidency of the AFL-CIO next year. It says here from Counterpunch, Harry Kelber will challenge Richard Trumka for the presidency of the AFL-CIO at the Labor Unions Convention September 8th through the 12th, 2013 in Los Angeles. Says, remember Harry Kelber? Well, we've had him on this show several times. And
almost every week.
Yeah.
We did have him every week early on.
Yeah, yeah. We should have him on more often.
Yeah, people would call him up and record the set.
Cool. He's a labor activist and writer who runs The Labor Educator. Says, every week, Kelber eviscerates the leaders of the AFL-CIO for not actively challenging the corrupt corporate establishment in Washington for paying 131 of its executives more than $100,000 a year and for censoring any criticism of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. In an interview with Corporate Crime Reporter last year, Kelber said that Trumka was all talk, no action. Quoting him, it says, Trumka makes speeches to please the membership, Kelber told Corporate Crime Reporter last year, but there is no action to do anything. He comes out as an advocate of change, and he ends up without change. He had all kinds of possible opportunity for nonviolent action to express the discontent of American workers. Here's the thing about Kelber. He has a sense of timing. He announced his candidacy to challenge Trumka June 20th on his 98th birthday. He'll be 99 years old at the time of the AFL-CIO's election next September. And he says, this is not a frivolous decision, Kelber said. My candidacy guarantees that there will be an actual election with a printed ballot and serious debates on the issues confronting American workers and their unions at the AFL-CIO convention. Trumka and his bureaucratic group have no plans to rebuild the Federation, Kelber said. They have a record of legislative failures. Trumka makes crowd-pleasing speeches, but he has avoided any direct action that would command the attention of either Congress or the White House.
Juniors at Muhammad Seymour High School have scored higher than ever on the ACT exam this year, and teachers are saying it's the result of a required course that made its debut last autumn. The year-long course, for which students received a quarter of a credit, was intended to better equip the juniors to take their college entrance exams. The Muhammad Seymour School Board approved the course last summer with the understanding that teachers would be reporting on its results in 1 year's time. At last week's school board meeting, Principal Shannon Cheek and teachers Dan Ryan and Jamie Colbert presented their data on the test scores. The juniors took the test in April as part of the Prairie State Achievement Exam, and their scores were great. The composite average this year was 23.4, beating the old record of some 22.7. One student scored a perfect 36, the first such high score in the school's history, while 38 of the juniors scored 30 and above. It looks like we have some really smart kids in the Muhammad Seymour School District.
Oh, yes, and they have those highly overcompensated teachers to do that, too.
Yeah.
We talked about this story a couple of weeks ago, but we'll report on it again here. It says, since Monday, 10 workers and consumers have been hunger striking on behalf of the embattled U.S. Postal Service. Their action comes amid a fierce debate over what ails the agency and how to fix it. It's a shame, says hunger striker Tom Dodge, to let something that's so efficient and doing so well just die, starve to death. In an emailed statement, the U.S. Postal Service expressed respect for the hunger strikers' right to engage in lawful public dialogue and cited its own efforts to raise awareness of the urgent need for postal reform legislation. U.S. Postal Service said that the dire financial condition of the Postal Service, which is currently losing $25 million a day and is projected to record a loss of more than $14 billion this fiscal year, requires necessary and responsible cost reduction steps to ensure the long-term affordability of mail and to return the organization to long-term financial stability. Like the strikers, the U.S. Postal Service emphasized the importance of addressing the pre-funding of retiree health benefits. It also called for full implementation of the U.S. Postal Service comprehensive five-year plan, which the strikers oppose. The pre-funding mandate was part of the 2006 Postal Accountability and Enhancement Act, which was passed on a voice vote in the final days of unified GOP control of government. The mandate, which has no parallel in government or business, required the U.S. Postal Service to fund 75 years of benefits over the following 10 years. While imposing that expense, the same act put new restriction on postal revenue, including a restriction on providing non-postal services. If not for the pre-funding mandate, U.S. Postal Service would have run an operational profit in the first quarter of the current fiscal year.
Yeah, I got a little comment on this here. All of these so-called conservatives who are founding father this,
right,
Constitution that,
yeah,
the post office is in the Constitution.
Yeah.
It's a constitutionally mandated thing, and they want to run it down.
Yeah.
Now, where is it now? Huh? We keep hearing all this all the time. Oh, founding fathers, this is a Christian nation, and
right,
I should have surface-to-air missiles and everything else. And boy, but it comes to something. Actually, a very successful public operation. It is government, but it is public. It is a nonprofit situation. It's people working together, and it's worked very, very well. Oh, I know you'll complain a little bit, but I'll tell you what. I get paychecks mailed from Chicago to get to me in 2 days.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
And that's regular mail.
Yep. How about if we go to a little music here, and we'll come back with some workers' interest, workers' independent news, and then we'll be back with Tom's poem. And so here's Johnny Drummer doing Somebody Please Give Me a Job.
job so I can pay these bills. As long as I get a paycheck, I don't care what kind it is. When you got no money in your pocket, nobody wants to be bothered with you. When you got no money in your pocket, nobody wants to be bothered with you. Just call on your so-called friend. You'll find out they always got something to do. Tell me, what can a man do when I know I'm not very educated? Tell me, what can I do when I'm not very well educated? You know, I tried to operate that computer, but that darn thing is just too complicated. That's why somebody please give me a job so I can pay my bills. Please give me a job so I can pay my bills. As long as I got a paycheck in my pocket, I don't care what kind it is.
And that is Johnny Drummer singing, "Somebody Please Give Me a Job." And you are in tune to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM and streaming at WEFT.org. And we've come to that time of the program. Tom's poem for this week from his collection Cries for Justice will be "Choose a Road."
When working folks just cannot work because there is no work to do, how can they pay the bills they owe when there is not a paycheck due? We've trusted liars far too long. We've watched them steal our homes, our dreams. Since bankers own the government, they get away with all their schemes. There are more hungry people now in our beloved USA, and far more homeless in the streets than we've seen in many a day. when there are two roads to travel, depression or prosperity, where exactly are we headed in this 21st century? We have the means to feed the world, but instead we bomb it away. We don't even care for our own, the poor who in the streets must stay. Enough of us have the spirit to live like we were truly free, yet inept politicians don't hear the pleas of our community. Time is near to change the players in an unfair and biased game, to put in ones who'll work for us, whom we'll have no reason to blame. November is approaching soon, Election Day is not that far. When it's time to mark your ballot, remember who the liars are. Choose a Road was written at the Poets Loft in Champaign, Illinois on August 27, 2010, and was brought to you live today, June 30th, 2012, here on the Illinois World Labor Hour on WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign, Community Radio for East Central Illinois.
Thanks, Tom. Excellent as always. And it's about that time that we do a couple public service announcements. We'll always mention that this Sunday and every Sunday you can tune into Labor's View television program on local cable channel 6. One of our co-hosts, David Johnson, and friend of the show, Jim Iman, are on there every week giving you some great insights into labor issues and videos and whatnot. That's Sunday at 4 o'clock, this Sunday and every Sunday, Labor's View TV on local cable channel 6. And we can mention a couple other things. We had some folks on here a couple weeks ago from the ISO, the International Socialist Organization. So we should remind you that the Socialism 2012 conference is going on this weekend up in Chicago, June 28th to July 1st. All kinds of great speakers up there. And it's going on at, I believe, the Crown Plaza Hotel. Let's see, you can join us for more than 100 presentations on such topics as Where is the Egyptian Revolution Going?, The Future of the Occupy Movement, Marxism and Imperialism, The Overpopulation Myth, The Communist Manifesto, The New War on Women, and many, many more issues. And once again, that's going on in Chicago this weekend, the International Socialism 2012 Conference. You can get more information, email them at info@socialismconference.org. Going on this weekend, they got three things they're talking about there: educate, agitate, and occupy. And we can also mention that there's a North First Street Farmers Market goes on the Thursdays, started in June here a couple weeks ago, Thursdays from 3 to 7 p.m. on North First Street. It's located in the parking lot just north of University Avenue. They got fruits, vegetables, herbs, honey. They got barbecue. They have cooking demos, arts and crafts, live music, and free family activities. And we should also mention that WEFT is a co-sponsor, and we're emceeing one of the stages at the 2012 Blues Brews and Barbecue Festival going on last night and tonight. All afternoon, starting at about noon, it'll be out there. Some great barbecue vendors, some craft breweries up there, and much more. All happening right around the corner from WEFT on Walnut and Main Street in downtown Champaign. Come on up Walnut Street, and the street's blocked off. They got a bunch of barbecue vendors out there. For more information on that, you can go to bluesbrewsandbbqfest.com, and be some great music happening out there.
Hey, here's something that sounds pretty good at the Samuel Music Family and Future Star Stage.
The Kazoos?
The Kazoo Jam yeah. at 6 o'clock, and immediately afterwards, the Blues Harmonica Clinic, and you get a free harmonica there.
Yeah, yeah. Joe Aslin, who's played locally with Kilbourne Alley and the Sugar Prophets, was doing a harmonica clinic up there yesterday, and he had a bunch of people standing out there with their free harmonicas, and it's a great time. He's a very informative, great harmonica player. So, I think that's what Bill's got to schedule there.
The Kazoo Jam starts at 6 p.m.
Yeah, cool. There's all kinds of stuff going on.
Oh, sorry. Wait a minute, folks. That was yesterday. Darn it.
Oh.
The wrong page. Gosh, I'm so disappointed.
Yeah. You can head up there. There'll be good stuff going on all day at the Future Star Stage.
There's nothing like Blues Kazoo, man.
You got that right.
I mean, Jimi Hendrix did it on Crosstown Traffic.
Yeah.
Except he didn't actually even use a kazoo. He used a comb and tissue paper, the poor man's kazoo.
Really? Really?
Yeah. Do, 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 do. I got to find a comb.
We'll do that. We'll find a comb. There's all kinds of great stuff going out there. The main stage, the Central Illinois Bank stage. You know, they're going to have a Nick Moss Super Jam tonight. John Namath is out there. Come on out and brave the heat at about 2 or 3 o'clock this afternoon. Check out John Namath. He's a great blues harmonica and vocalist, performer. And Prairie Crossroads Blues Society has got a bunch of stuff going on in the Orpheum Theater over there. They're going to have guitar workshops, drum workshops. They had some folks there yesterday demonstrating homemade instruments. They had a diddly bow in there, and they had a thing called an utterbot, where they cut the bottom off of a bottle and put like a kitchen glove on there and filled it with water, and they could almost make it like a kazoo, Bill, you know, like a slide whistle. You would squeeze the glove and change the water level in the bottle, and as you hummed over the top of it, you could make it almost like a slide whistle. It was quite interesting. So, anyway, I think we're going to go into a little bit of workers' independent news here. We'll go with Friday's edition, and we'll be back, and Bill's got a little something on the computer that we're going to play after Workers' Independent News.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. Organized labor is hailing the Supreme Court decision upholding the Affordable Care Act. SEIU President Mary Kay Henry says the Supreme Court rejected the cynical politics of Republicans opposed to health care reform, and working people won a resounding victory. National Nurses United says the ruling shouldn't be the end of healthcare activists' efforts to find a permanent fix for America's broken healthcare system. The Nurses Union says it will step up a campaign for a universal healthcare program based on patient need, nonprofits, or ability to pay, a Medicare for all. American Federation of Teachers President Randy Weingarten says now that the Affordable Care Act has been upheld, healthcare has been put within reach of working families, and they will be able to get treatment they need without battling big insurance companies. Families USA was one of the many organizations that had been arguing for the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act. Shortly after the Supreme Court ruling came down, Executive Director Ron Pollack held a conference call to tout what the upholding of the act meant.
No longer will they be able to charge a discriminatory premium based on health status, like an adult who may have high blood pressure. No longer will an insurance company be able to discriminate against women in the premiums they charge exclusively because of their agenda.
In May, Workers Independent News was in Washington, D.C. for the Affordable Care Act hearings. At that time, we spoke with National Medical Association President Dr. Cedric Bright about why his organization was supporting the legislation.
The law helps to catch the vulnerable people, to be able to have a safety net for our vulnerable people who fall through the cracks. The law does not allow for insurance to deny any type of patient's coverage who have pre-existing conditions. The law does not allow for insurers to cancel your coverage when you actually get sick. The law actually has the ability for you to continue to get care where in the past there were limits on how much care you could receive.
One aspect of the act that isn't discussed very often is how it will specifically benefit women. Some 19 million women are currently uninsured, but in 2014, part of the law kicks in that will make Medicaid available to 10.3 million women. Women, on average, pay higher rates for health insurance, but part of the law now prohibits insurance companies from charging based on gender ratings. Additionally, the law takes a big leap when it comes to maternity laws in the United States. Businesses with more than 50 employees will now be required to allow nursing women to take a break for the purpose of relieving breast milk.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
For more information, visit laborradio.org.
And we're back. You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM and streaming at WEFT.org. And Bill, you got that computer?
Yeah, I want to give it a little, as they say, set it up a little bit here.
Yeah.
This is from YouTube, and hopefully our connection will not be bizarre. And it's actually the audio from an animation by someone named Mark Fiore, who is a political animator and is obviously on the left. And today we've been talking quite a bit about public employees. And this is a piece called Deficit Bots. And unfortunately, while I'm listening to it, I am thinking a lot of conservatives, right-wingers, anti-worker people could really take this seriously.
Yeah.
But listen away.
They're out to get you. They're in your town. They're down the street. They might even show up at your door. First, they'll take your job. Then they'll take your soul. Firemen, policemen, and teachers. It's time to send them back home and put America back to work. They're not real American workers. They're not even human. They're shape-shifting deficit bots from the planet Bureaucron. First, they'll kill the economy. Then they'll kill you. With their twisted brand of public service and taxpayer-funded education and safety. They masquerade as your friends and neighbors, sometimes posing as helpful park rangers, mailmen, or worse yet, Social Security administrators. But they would just as soon kill the private sector as make a birdhouse out of your skull. So beware, government workers are lurking everywhere. And though they may even give you a smile, they're probably smiling because they just killed capitalism.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message of private sector goodness.
Yes, folks, that's Mark Fiore. Then it says here he's got a website, markfiore.com, and that's MarkFiore. A lot of really amusing things that also make very good points, very edifying, for your edification. You know, throw it all over Facebook.
There you go. How about if we listen to a little bit of Hightower Radio News here, and we'll be back with some more commentary.
And now for some happy talk, by which I mean a non-corporate, little-d democratic, and altogether pleasurable economic development that's spreading across our country. In a word, beer. More specifically, craft breweries are flourishing from Maine to Oregon, with happy hopheads in town after town now able to boast of their own local, unique, zesty, and fun batch of suds. While Anheuser-Busch, now owned by a German conglomerate, and Miller Coors, partially owned by Canadians, still dominate America's beer market, sales of the nondescript national brands have soured in recent years. But innovative small-batch hometown yeast wranglers have tapped a burgeoning market of brewski lovers who are reaching for the real gusto. Since 2004, craft beers have doubled their share of the U.S. market. Some 250 upstart breweries opened last year alone, bringing their total number to nearly 2,000. This has been a true populist economic phenomenon. Consumers and artisans have found each other and spontaneously created an alternative, locally based economy that helps sustain themselves and their community, rather than having their money siphoned out by faraway profit takers. Of course, the big boys are slyly trying to sink their own taps into the craft success of the small guys. Budweiser and Miller, for example, are now marketing pretend craft beers, having bought such once local brands as Chicago's Goose Island and Wisconsin's Leinenkugel. Unabashed by this consumer deception, however, a Miller spokesman sniffed, "We don't concern ourselves with what someone else defines as a craft brewer." Wow, sounds like Miller's man quaffed one too many mugs of a genuine local beer from San Diego called Arrogant Bastard. This is Jim Hightower saying, when in doubt about whether a local beer is really local, ask the locals.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
Yeah, I played that because there's a lot of craft brewers out there at the Champagne Blues Brews and Barbecue Fest today. I think there's
an arrogant bastard is there.
Yeah,
you'll be
Founders
able to buy Arrogant Bastard beer there.
Founders is there, and Stone, who makes the Arrogant Bastard, I believe. Rogue is out there.
The
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah, man! All these beer.
Two Brothers out of Illinois is there. There are a bunch of craft brews there. Good stuff. Well, that's an editorial comment.
Yes.
As Tom said earlier in his story, keep yourself hydrated if you go out there.
Well, the problem is...
They do have free water out there, too. So.
Yes. Well, especially if you are drinking alcohol when it's hot out, you really do need to drink water because... you know, most people have never seen this, but if you take a little bit of water and put it down on a surface, if you pour alcohol on it, the alcohol dries the water up. Alcohol dehydrates you.
Yes.
Along with
does.
Caffeine.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So, which, by the way, was the basis of a big part of this really weird horror movie that had Jon Stewart in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was this high school. It was called The Faculty. Hmm. And they were actually these alien creatures that looked like humans, but they needed water. So this one guy had this fake drug he was passing out that had a lot of coke or caffeine in it, and he'd sell it in big pins, you know, with the
really?
Stuff taken out of them.
Yeah.
And he took one of those big pins and stuck Jon Stewart in the eye, so Jon Stewart desiccated and went away.
Interesting.
As an alien.
Interesting.
Yeah, but that has little to do with labor issues, except for it had about teachers.
Yeah. There you go. Bill, you got any commentary you want to get to this week?
Well, yeah, it does. And it has to do with one of the major things going on, and sort of, and that's weather. And this week, folks, I mean, I don't know, it was weird. I went on this job. I was going on a hod-carrying job.
Hmm.
And
carrying mortar for them?
That's right. It's also known as mason tending, and mm-hmm. masons are bricklayers, block mm-hmm. layers, stone masons, okay? And we tend them, and it's a laborer thing, but in the past there was a separate hod carriers union.
Right.
And in fact, when I joined the laborers, it was not the Laborers International Union of North America. It was the International Union of Laborers and Hod Carriers
right.
of North
right.
America.
I didn't realize there was a national Hod Carriers Union. When I was 16, they were building Country Fair apartments out in West Champaign. I was carrying hod for this bricklayer from Wilmington, I believe it was, up in northern Illinois. And I didn't realize there was a union I could have joined.
Well, you couldn't have joined the union and had that job. You see, what a lot of people don't realize is that until you get it's three or four stories, apartments are considered residential. That's like most of those big apartment buildings on campus and aren't any higher than three stories.
Yeah.
Those are all done by non-union contractors. But anyway, so I had this little hod carrying job, and it was for a guy that I'd worked for before who actually is one of the worst bosses I've ever had in my life. And the job we had before was this really huge job on campus at the University of Illinois. And for some reason, he had me handling this really complicated part of it, which was the stone masonry. Now, when you look at a lot of buildings, you'll see they have brick. And then they have like these fancy other kinds of stones, you know, and they'll have sills made out of this stone. It's usually a beige color, but it could be anything. It could be really fancy. But the thing is, when you get on a pretty big building like that, that's got a lot of different stuff, you end up with all kinds of different sizes and shapes of this stone. And I didn't have any experience doing it, but this job with this guy 5 years ago was just, I mean it, man. I was upset every weekend. I was mad all weekend of that job. And when I got a call to, this isn't just about heat either. It's something that we bring up on this show. And I think that people need to think about a lot more and in their own lives and what it means to be a person and the idea of alienation like Marx talks about and so on and so forth. But what it was, I got the call for this job. And they told me who it was for, and it was like, right afterwards, I was upset. You know, I went ahead and took the job, but I was upset.
You didn't really care to work for this guy again, huh?
Well, I didn't know. I thought at the time, consciously, it was like, yeah, I think I'll go back with Brad, because actually, he's a very different person, especially on construction jobs. And I was kind of interested in it, and I thought I could get along with him, and it wasn't going to be a real long thing. But my visceral, I mean, I was just upset. It was like the experience I had had before. It was like you were trained to feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went, and we were on the job, and things went all right, you know, except for the way this guy does things. He were doing it, and of course, the way that would be much easier for me would require him to bring about three times as many walk planks, and so on. So, but I've done the same thing for other contractors. So instead, like, we're handing this 8-inch block and buckets of mortar up, you know, up over my shoulder level to get them on one plank. Then I have to climb up and get on that plank and hand it up, get it up over my head and dump it on the mortar board there for the block layer.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was hard. And then the heat started hitting me too. And I don't know, it might have. And finally, Thursday, we started at 6 o'clock, and I had to leave after an hour. I just couldn't do it. I mean, but one of the funny things about it was like, and this is sort of a generational thing for almost all of my career. So long in my career as a laborer, I was the youngest guy on most of the jobs. And it's not been that long, but now I'm the old guy.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Yeah, and he was saying, like, yeah, you're pretty good shape for a 56-year-old guy. Yeah, but it's, I mean, it's tough, man. I mean, look what you're doing in a lot of your jobs. And that's not it. I don't care. You're sitting at a desk, man. Your back is probably being screwed up because you can't get up and walk around and whatever. You're a clerk in a store.
On your feet all day?
Yes, and your feet and your back are getting messed up.
Yeah.
You go to a job. Maybe it's not physically demanding, but the people you have to deal with are just outrageous.
Yeah.
You're doing things that you don't want to do. That's like, man, I really need to make some money. And the quickest way I could do that would be to go out to the Dakotas and build those pipelines for those people that are fracking out there.
Yeah.
But I don't really want to do that, even though I was big on pipelines earlier, but I've read a lot more about things.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I definitely don't want to do a tar sands pipeline.
Yeah.
Even though I was real upset in 2009 when we didn't have any work, and I only had 6 weeks' work, and there were people in Leroy holding up a tar sands pipeline from Canada that was going to go to two refineries in Illinois.
Yeah.
It was not going to go to the Gulf of Mexico like the Keystone XL. So that would have been at least produced in Illinois. It might have been put on some barge right off the river or pipeline straight down to the Gulf to be put on ships. But, you know,
would have been Illinois jobs at least. And
right. Yeah. But I, you know, I really needed that job that year, and it wasn't there, man, because a retired railroader in Leroy had been buying a little bit of land throughout most of his adult life so him and his wife could have a little private nature reserve. And this idiot pipeline company
wanted to go right through it.
Yeah, we're going to cut a 50-foot swath through your little nature reserve because we already have a pipe running through there.
Yeah.
See, they did have the right of way,
yeah,
and they eventually got legal. But, you know, it's what I'm saying. I don't want to promote the tar sands because I've learned since then a lot more about them.
Yeah.
You know,
takes an awful lot of energy to get some oil out of those tar sands.
So I don't know. I think instead of, like, going out and at least the natural gas is a lot better fuel. But the thing is they're fracking out there.
Mm-hmm.
And
which is destroying the environment, people's drinking water.
Well, here's the thing. There's been big controversies in Ohio, Pennsylvania. In fact, I think it's banned in New York State.
Certain areas, I believe, yes.
And, but see, out there, there's nobody there.
Yeah.
That's why they need people like me to go there and work. There's so few people out there that there are two laborers locals in Minnesota that cover the Dakotas.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's a lot of territory, too.
Yeah. So you see, And everybody, I did notice that in the highway bill, that I'm glad they're getting that thing passed, man, because we're needing work bad, and we're needing roads fixed bad. When I go under a bridge and I look and I see where that 2 foot square, 6 inch thick or 3 inch thick piece of concrete fell off right over the lane I'm driving over, I'm thinking we need to do something about that bridge. And you see that all over this state. Just drive down Route 72, you'll see it. Between here and Monticello, or between here and Pasotum on 57, or between, maybe, I don't know, 74, I don't go that far. But we need these things done. But one thing that happened in that bill, one thing that was holding that bill up, is that they did stop the Keystone XL pipeline. Because, and here's the thing, I've talked to people about it, and they're like, oh, you know, thousands of jobs. I'm going to tell you right now, at best, there have been maybe three, I'll say less than 5,000 jobs building that pipeline. Not the ridiculous numbers of like 50,000 that were being touted by the right wing. And I know that just from working on them.
Yeah. And they were just going to refine that stuff down there in the Gulf Coast and put it on boats to ship it overseas, right?
That's right. And they originally wanted to run that pipeline through British Columbia. But the people in British Columbia said, no, we don't want it.
Yeah.
And I know right now that at least in Vancouver, it's probably not too bad in the construction industry, but they're not having the giant boom that they had before 2009 either.
No.
Which included building for the Olympics. And a 3-year-long bridge job. You know? So they probably could have used the work. But I, you know, and I think these things, you know, because this comes up on jobs I'm on. They're like, oh, God, they won't do that pipeline. And, you know, and there's all those jobs. And for one thing, well, you're a cement finisher. You're not going to work on it.
Yeah. No.
Nope. You know, there's. No. Or you're an electrician, you're not going to be working on a pipeline. That's my; those are my jobs, being operators and teamsters and welders. You know, so and that's just, and it's a fallacy that there are that many jobs, and they are all, they're very short jobs too.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but I just thought that I'm just going to try and stick it through here and not deal with something like that. And I don't even know where this ramble started and ended, but what it's something I have been listening to a lot is a podcast by R.D. Wolf, and I believe her name's Harriet Fraud.
Fraud?
F-R-A-A-D. Fraud. I don't know. Fraud.
You getting those off of
off the internet.
Internet.
And that would be R.D. Wolf. W-O-L-F-F-E dot, I can't remember if it's .com, .org, or .net.
Yeah.
But anyway, Richard D. Wolf is a fairly well-known Marxist economist. Harriet Fraud is a psychiatrist.
Okay.
And so they're going through this whole, they're doing a lot of podcasts on how the economy is affecting people psychologically, and how psychology is affecting the economy. And if you really look at a lot of things, that's what it's all about. Number one, the market. Don't you always, everything's about the psychology of the market on Wall Street. Number two, the psychology of what you're having to go through at work when what you're doing is being appropriated. You know, I don't know. It's like, at least one thing, I can drive around and point to you all the buildings and everything I ever worked on, and I get to use those things. But so many people have so many jobs where what they do just like goes away. You know, and I don't know. I find it just very, I guess it gets to where we are just so separated from everything and each other because of this process.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap up the Illinois World Labor Hour for this week. Stay tuned. Folks from Occupy the Airwaves, at least Sean is here this week. And remember, you can come out and see WEFT out at the Blues Brews and Barbecue going on downtown
And everything champagne? I just said was just totally impromptu.
Yeah.